Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below. Join us on a deep dive in wheat. We discuss why Adrian stayed on the farm and why he wanted to start to change the world on the most difficult place, at home, which is a large industrial, mostly extractive commodity wheat growing region in France. Picture a sea of wheat, large, relatively flat fields and no trees. He argues we're in the prehistoric era of organic farming, and there's so much to discover, especially around population wheat and why it's really difficult to pick sourdough with traditional organic wheat seeds that are not bred for high productive farms. We also learn about no-till organic farming and why it's the way to go, but it's also super, super difficult, and why all farmers, or let's say most farmers, need to become seed breeders again. Enjoy. This is the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast, Investing as if the planet mattered, where we talk to the pioneers in the regenerative food and agriculture space to learn more on how to put our money to work to regenerate soil, people, local communities, and ecosystems while making an appropriate and fair return. Why my focus on soil and regeneration? Because so many of the pressing issues we face today have their roots in how we treat our land and our sea, grow our food, what we eat, wear and consume. And it's time that we as investors, big and small, and consumers start paying much more attention to the dirt/soil underneath our feet. To make it easy for fans to support our work, we launched our membership community, and so many of you have joined us as a member. Thank you. If our work created value for you, and if you have the means, and only if you have the means, consider joining us. Find out more on gumroad.com/investinginregenag. That is gumroad.com/investinginregenag. Or find the link below. Welcome to another episode, today with farmer, breeder and baker. Welcome, Adrian.
Welcome, yes. How's it going?
Very, very good. I'm looking forward to this conversation. We got an introduction through Nicola, who we had on recently when we took a deep dive into seeds. And I always ask to guests, like, who else should we have here? I mean, we have a long list of people we would love to interview, but it doesn't mean we're not looking for other fascinating people to unpack their stories and what they're working on Regen. And he immediately said, you have to get Adrian on. So I'm very happy that this is happening. And we always like to start with a personal question to lead into your story and to see why are you spending most of your time, and I would guess most of your awake time, actually focusing on soil. How did that happen? Were you born into a farm? How did that journey lead you to soil?
Well, when you grow on farm, you are linked to the soil. That's right. But you are linked also with the social way of your parents will manage the farming job. And actually, for me, we have been very lucky because there is a really open-minded way of thinking about farming, but also the job in itself, you know. So the link with soil for us on the farm, because it's kind of a family farm. I work with my brother, and we are always been focused on, you know, good health, what you eat is what you are. So, good health is good, food, and, how to do good food. So it's really all the way of we think, the farming job here is, to get, a good health with good products, but also, good way of being a farmer, because farming is can be a very hard task for every day. You struggle with economic life, and when you want to do good quality, but also food which will be able every people to buy because it's not too expensive. You will have to do many choices to success in these targets. So we managed to introduce organic farming on the farm, and then we started the project. At the first was mainly to transform the wheat and other cereals into flour and bread, and we are specialized in sourdough bread, and it's really exciting because from now on we are in 2024, and we still have a lot of things to discover about ancestral things, which are soil and also sourdough, and so life actually. So that's it.
No, there's so much to unpack there, but let's take it one by one. So you were born on a farm, and we're going to go to that farm, like, let's say visually soon. I will ask you to describe a bit where you are and also how it looks like, so everybody who's listening, maybe walking the dog or maybe cooking, etc., has an idea of where we are, of course without seeing video, because that's not possible. But first, you were born on a farm. In many cases, people who are born on farms try to get away as far as possible because it's not a fit. In your case, you didn't, or maybe you went away and came back. But what was the reason you and also maybe your brother stayed on the farm or took over? Because we hear often this succession is a challenge for farmers to keep or to have the next generation, let's say, to continue the farm because of all the challenges. What made you take on that challenge or that opportunity? What made you stay?
Yeah, so actually we left the farm. We left the farm with studies, and we were far away from our parents and far away from the farm because, for my part, I wanted to discover a lot of things, and I traveled a lot, and I discover with all the travels, all the people we met, that there is a lot of things to do where you are actually, and in France, the organic farming, the way of rethink our way of farming and produce food, it's mainly done from 20 years ago. It was done in specialized areas where there were some initiative, cultural initiative. And in our farm, we are located on a farm in a very crops area. You know, it's a big fields, no trees in the fields, cereal fields. People is not connected to the food produced on the field, and for us it was kind of big deal to say, well, if we want to change a little bit the world with our little arms, maybe it's a good way to start where it's the most difficult, and in case it was our roots where we grew up when we were children, and so that made the connection, and our place is called farming region is more is called in France as the wheat region, the
wheat belt.
The wheat belt from France.
Is it very flat? Like what the landscape? You already mentioned not many trees. What does the landscape look like?
Big fields. It's like a wheat sea. No trees. So a lot of wind for instance. Planting trees to make the landscape better, and all the the positive impacts we will have with reintroducing trees in the countryside. It's a good aim too. So we're trying to do that also. And then to be connected to the food produced on the place. And that is kind of a revolution in our place. It's not on other places, but in our region, it's really a revolution, as you can drive hours and see big fields of cereals. It's kind of more intensive farming, you know. So having organic fields, and you will be able to say, oh, this wheat, we will eat it next year, buying the bread at the shop here. So it's kind of wow. We create a connection to the soil, and this is very important for us as farmer, because we that makes sense. But also for the consumers and the people, the citizens living on the place.
And so what came first, the organic transition or that connection to the final product and thus the consumer, whoever eats, the eater, let's say? Because as you said, that's such a revolutionary thought in many and thing in many commoditized landscapes, where the trailer comes and picks up the commodity at the end of the season, and then it leaves and it will never come back in any shape or form. And the person will go to a supermarket and buys some kind of bread that for sure is not made with that wheat. So that's a revolutionary thing to begin with, but also the organic piece, of course, the slightly more messy fields, undercover, different seeds, different practices, and all of that. Like, when you came back, what did you tackle first, or was it a combined action?
That was a combined action. We wanted to be on every on every point, because we weren't able to say we will make bread with conventional wheat. So organic farming for us is the future of farming. We have this kind of progressive attitude in organic farming. That means I say still now that we are at the prehistoric organic farming now, and we have so much to discover to make healthy food system production in organic farming, which will be productive and but also healthy to people, you know, and produce energy but also food. You know, we have to manage to create this way of farming. So that means you will have to get the seeds, the good seeds, to make it real. And now I'm saying we don't have it. So for me, the big revolution we will see in organic farming in general on the world is it's the genetic solution, but the genetic, you know, in a good way. the genetic solution, the future of the good solution about genetic will be it will not put the farmer in a bad situation.
No, because as an intro, I specifically mentioned breeder, which means you are very busy with seeds. Like, how did that come about? Was it also from the beginning? Like, did you decide to do everything at once, like organic farming transition, which we'll talk about for sure, it wasn't easy. Mm. Baker, which is not easy either. And breeder, like, how did the breeding piece, and if you say it's not there yet, just for people to understand, like, how difficult is it to get good seeds as an organic wheat farmer in this case?
Well, it's a kind of really pragmatic situation. We decided to do organic bread from sourdough, and now in France, when you want to buy wheat variety, you will find some suitables from organic farming, but not exactly for sourdough processing of bread.
So it came from a quality yeah. focus of you. Wow.
Yeah, but about technological processing, not only about way of thinking, you know. So a lot of people, a lot of baker in France working this way, bread, will say, oh, you will need some ancient varieties, ancient wheats. We are lucky because in France there is a lot of different ancient wheats we can still find. But we tried here the different varieties we could find. And the problem is we have kind of a good soil here, so the ancient varieties are not suitable for making production in good soils because they will fall down or they will have diseases. And so the ancient wheat are good in a way for the processing, but for me they weren't good for the agronomic aspects, but also mostly for the big deal that organic farming has to feed people. So we have to produce, you know. So the idea came really quickly with this conclusion: we don't have the good genetics, we will have to create it. So the fact is, on the farm, my grandfather used to work with a breeder, a wheat breeder, and at the beginning of the 20th century, all the, you know, the breeders were farmers. And now all the breeders are multinationals, big company. So the economic benefits the company would find in a breeding project like this will be nonsense, because there is not a lot of money to do with that, because it's a niche market, it's a little market. So the only way to find solution, actually, I think, is to that the farmers restart to be the breeders, because they know the goals, you know, why you will create new breeding project is to find the solution we are dealing with every day. Is to say, varieties adapted to organic farming. Adapted context, maybe yeah. to live with companion crops, mm-hmm. in a way of thinking organic farming in a direction of no-till organic farming, but also with a good processing qualities to make the flour with a stone mill system, but also sourdough bread. And sourdough bread, a different characteristic in a difference of classic bread, you would say, is you will have to put the more water you can in the flour to make the bread conserve a lot. In traditional bread, you will put 60% of water, and us, we are trying to be in between 80% and 95%, and that makes a very good quality of bread. It will last a week at least. You still will be able to eat it very freshly a week. So,
which is fascinating from a food waste, yeah. preservatives, and all of that
without
perspective.
Conservatives yeah. and additives.
Without.
It's only
yeah.
natural mm-hmm. stuff, you know. So,
but you need a different type of wheat coming off the field, basically, to absorb that amount of water. Yeah. And so how far, like now, we speak the beginning of 2024. Like, these are a lot of, like, breeding takes time. I think that's the underlying, the big message. Where are you with your breeding in terms of all the different goals that you have for your context for the wheat? Like, how has that been evolving over the last years?
Well, so we started 10 years ago to make the first crosses. So it is said that you need 10 years to create a new variety. So we're starting to have good new varieties, but it's kind of the first. So it's I'm saying it's a try. In the next year, we will have the good ones. But it's a good performance for us because we are farmers. We are not breeders. We are not a breeding company, so we don't have that much money to put in that research, and that's the main problem. But that's what is amazing for me, and what gives us energy to continue is we are be able this year to notice the first OHM, which is organic heterogeneous material, which is in okay, fact
we first, need to explain that.
It is the first organic, we cannot say variety because it's a population, it's a diversity population
wheat.
The first it's the first organic wheat population officially recognized.
Wow.
So for the French government, it's kind of new stuff. So they don't know very how to manage with that, you know?
Because it's not one variety, of course. It's a collection.
It's not, it doesn't respect the distinction, homogeneity, and stability of the normal variety we will find in the shop when you want to buy wheat seeds. So it's kind of tricky because it's completely new for everybody. So nobody doesn't really know what will be the future of this. So
and just to describe for people that are not deep into, we have discussed it once before, I think, on the podcast with Van on population wheat, which I will link below as another interview. But just population wheat, what does that, like, what is it, first of all, and why is it so important?
Well, you just have to consider really simply that variety, from now on, the variety we can buy. I'm talking mostly about wheat because it's not true for every plant. When you buy a variety of wheat, it will be the same, in French we say clone. I don't know how to say it in English. It's the same material, the same genetic. It's on the field. You will see also the same one. You know, the same plant, really the same plant, genetically, no different. In a population, you will consider that you and me, we are in a field with a lot of other humans, and we create a population with all the diversity. We are all humans. There is the wheat population is only wheat, but there is in each plant difference, a genetic difference, which makes that we consider it's a population, and this population will be able to change with the different climatic changes and the different way of harvesting of tilling, harvesting, farming this variety. We cannot say variety, but collection, population.
And but you harvest at the same time, so it's a field with a lot of different varieties, not super different weeds, of course, because then it gets too complicated. But it's a mix that adapts over the years to your specific, which means you have to collect the seeds, you reapply it to the same fields or to the same farm, and it starts adapting to the practices, the climate, etc. But you do harvest it at the same time, and you don't separate, right? It's not that you do mix the full, or you do mill the full mix and use that as the flour for your sourdough, which means every year and every field is slightly different.
That's it.
which is tricky for our baker system as well. I think bakery system, which means you have to think very differently or more traditional or more modern, maybe is the better term as a baker. But it does allow you to really adapt to your circumstances, which normal wheat, whatever you seed you buy, will never, because they're all clones of itself. So if something goes wrong, the whole field will go down basically. And then, so that's the first population one. And then, I mean, you don't know yet, but how does the bread taste? Have you tasted already tests with that, or is that too early because you're planting it?
Yeah. We tested it in bread. It's really good, actually. But the variety, still miss something about the processing to be perfect. But as say, my brother is the perfect wheat exists. Because, you know, the job of miller will be to do a mix of different flour to make the perfect one. So we do that on the farm as we grow different varieties and we mix them, you know. And every year it will change a little, so we will adapt our process every year. Because it's important also for the baker to have the same flour from February to April, because if it change every week, it's kind of tricky, you know. So there is a goal like that. But we're trying, in the trials, in the breeding program, to find the good, the perfect, you know, the perfect wheat. But I work also on traditional varieties, not only populations, because the main problem from now on, it's a population, as we said, it's really interesting. But the fact is, as the legislation is now, you cannot earn money from selling officially the seeds. As we have the French system about that, when you have classical variety, if the farmers grow this variety, you will have a cashback for the research. From this population, you cannot have this cashback. So we have to find a new way to finance the breeding program. And that is very complicated, because we have to find a new way of thinking, a new way to be connected to the product. The aim would be that the final consumer will pay for the research efforts we can do, because the bread is good, you know. So we have to find a way to make people understand the need of breeding program. But when you talk about breeding, people will say GMOs in the first world. So it's a really hard task to make people educate to this way of thinking, and it will be very difficult.
And to take one step back and look at, like, how difficult was it to start baking bread and sourdough bread, like, in your local context, like, to get your wheat and your flour actually on the table of people close to you. How was that process, and was it difficult or actually quite easy? Because you said before, most people here sell into the commodity markets and will never taste what they actually grew, and you really wanted to change that.
Yes. Can you explain more the question?
How difficult was it to get your flour into a bread form into your local community? Like, how difficult was it to start baking with that? Did you have to find a baker? Did you have to start the baker? Did you have to become the baker? What was the journey to get bread on the table?
I started with my brother, and my brother was a baker. So now we started two people. Now we are 15. So now we have a baker team, the fact is we were able to start slowly, because we did it step by step, and we still go this way, you know, on the evolution. We do it step by step, and we started, the two of us, me, we were very complementary with my brother, and I was more in the field and in the commercial stuff, and him was more on the milling system and the baking. So we did everything at two, but
fully vertically integrated.
Yeah, but very quickly we were not enough with two people. I say, because I wrote a book about the job of peasant baker, you know, the in France. So we will be able to put the link below the podcast.
Absolutely.
It's in French. It's not in English from now on. So it's a pity for maybe a lot of people listening. But it's a new peasant baker. It's a new way for the cereal farmers to get money, more money in the product act of farming, getting value in the grain, and but it's really hard task to do all the different actions to get bread and sell it in bread. You know, it's a really hard job, and as we say peasant baker, it's two job, but officially it will be more 25 different job, because you will have to manage all the different steps, and you cannot do it by your own. And at two people, it's hard. It's better
you're
if you
one
are
peasant
more,
or one baker. Yeah,
yeah. So you will create a community. Because
and was there demand? Well, how was the response from your local community? Because if you have now, I think you said 10 or 15 people, it means that it's a bakery that makes a lot of bread. Was it difficult to sell that bread locally? For sure, not cheap, really good quality, but not as cheap as some supermarket bread you will find.
That's it. Well, in France, we are in the French world. So in the bread world, you know, the bread is very important culturally. So everybody knows, maybe you know too, the French baguette. The baguette you will have under your arms, that's a typical French thing, but we don't do baguette. So it was hard at first to get people in our world, in our way of thinking.
Why are you not doing baguettes? Why are you not doing baguettes?
It's really simply because when you do sourdough bread, the best sourdough bread you will find, it will be the bigger. The bigger is the bread, the more conservative you will have, the more tasty you will have. So when you do baguette, it's little, and it's a lot of handing job when you make bread. And now it's really rare, the bakeries doing that by hand. It's machinery. And we wanted to still have the human act in making bread, but it has to be an economical way also. So we do like twice our bread started to from 500 grams. Which is twice of the weight of the baguette, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's twice bigger than a baguette. And we will go to 3 kilograms, so huge bread. And so we had to educate people to our bread. And there are still people who we'll find that it's a good project, it's nice, but they like baguette, you know, so they won't come. We still have friends say, oh no, I like baguette, so it's why I don't come to your shop, you know. It's very cultural, but when you taste the bread, and it lasts a week,
yeah.
So you will throw your bread at the garbage, you know. So and it's very tasty. You will get used to this bread, and a lot of people around the place got used to, and and they find it's better than the others. So they, this is why they come. They come, some people come because also it's organic, but not mostly. Most people come because it's good bread. So that's the friend, the
and
first
do you buy
of us.
Other flour from other farmers, or is all the flour coming from your farm?
All the flour come from the farm, but sometimes we have to buy some wheat also to those neighbors.
And do you have any conditions on them growing? Like, do they have to be certified organic? And do you have, like,
yeah.
Because you're saying we're in the Prius, like, do you certain conditions on no-till or limited till on cover crops, or how do you select who you buy from?
No, it's only organic farming, yeah.
And
well, after for
no,
no-till about this subject, regenerative agriculture, no-till organic farming.
How difficult kind is of, it in wheat?
Yeah, that's kind of tricky because doing no-till organic farming in France, like, no one know how to do it. But there is a lot of people thinking about doing it in a few years. So I'm part of a national association of no-till organic farming, as we say. We created a national association.
Wow.
And we are focused on that subject. But we are really open-minded that that is a goal, you know, that is not... we have to go in that direction because a lot of positive aspects we will find in this way of farming. But it's kind of difficult because it's a rotation, it's a different crop successing, and it depends on the system, it depends on the location, it depends on everything. So that's why in the genetic aspect I'm looking for in the breeding program is to have also genetics adapted to this kind of farming with companion crops as alfalfa, for instance. But we need alfalfa very low, as was mentioning Nicolas, you know, from Seedlink, work a little bit on that subject. Also, it's how to find a good cash crop living with companion crops in order to be successful in a no-till way of farming. That's it.
And have you seen examples, like, globally, have people figured out, I've seen some in the US, but I don't remember the exact crops, honestly, on, like, no-till organic farming at scale? Like, do you, as a working group, like, are you, as an association, are you Googling, searching, like, who has been using what kind of machinery,
yeah,
or where in the world can we find inspiration?
Yeah, for sure.
On this and bring it to France.
We're trying to be linked with more people we can. Like, for instance, this year we were organizing the French National Day of No-Till Organic Farming 2 weeks ago, and there were people from CETAB from Canada coming, and we had a lot of exchange, and it was really tremendous because also there were people from other European countries coming, and it's a new way of thinking organic farming or thinking farming, and it's so passionate. And it's so difficult that we have to find the good way to have collective intelligence to make it real. And what is kind of tricky, there is the machineries, which are very important in focus to success in this way of farming, but also the genetics. And the problem of the genetics is what we said before. It's there is no many companies working on that subject, so it's tricky. That's why, as a farmer and with my project, I'm trying to focus on that, because each year, every year, this question comes back, the question of, Yeah, we have to do that, but we don't have the plant which will be able to do that, as the alfalfa not selected for making hay or making grass to feed the cows, but also alfalfa selected to be a good companion for the wheat production. So we have to rethink all the farming system, you know, for in order to success in that goal.
Yeah, listeners cannot see it, but I can see Adrian really smiling and lighting up of the challenges ahead, but also the number of discoveries that you're gonna have. Like, this is the prehistoric times of organic, as you mentioned yourself, and there's still so much to discover, which is not discouraging you, but it's actually making you enthusiastic, because I can see that you're like, how do we find the right companion? How do we select for the right genetics in alfalfa that makes sense with the wheat? And it will keep you busy for a lot more years. And
And it's produce wheat to feed the world, and the organic farming will feed the world, you know. Yeah, there is so many solutions that it's amazing that we are still focused on things which we cost a lot of money to the society. As we have a lot of solution we can develop, which won't cost a lot of energy and a lot of economy to success. You know, it's not that hard. It's kind of easy, actually. You just have to put the good goals on the good financial way of financing it, you know. It's not but it's so it's kind of revolutionary, because as in France, because we're speaking about France now, there is only a few people thinking that way. For a lot, it's not possible.
And that's a perfect bridge to some questions I always like to ask around investing and around how to put money to work. So let's say we'll do this conversation live in a nice theater in Paris, and the room is filled with the who's and who's of the financial world of France. And they're either investing their own money or they're investing other people's money, like for pension funds and other investment funds. Of course, they learned a lot today, and maybe they will taste later the bread you've made, etc. But if there's one thing you want them to remember, because we only have a small attention span, if you want all of these people that work daily with putting money to work, if there's one thing we want to plant the seed in their mind, what would be that one thing?
That's a really tricky question. Well,
what should they know about your work? What should they absolutely remember when they walk away from that evening? Apart from bread can taste amazing and population wheat, but what should be in their minds that they should absolutely not forget?
That the future is belong us, and we have to rethink agriculture, rethink to make the to have the good seeds and with the new goals, you know.
Move the goals of the system. I think that's and flipping the question, what if you would be in charge of €1 billion? So a lot of money. I'm not looking for exact euro amounts, but I'm thinking, what would you focus on if you had to put that to work, if you had to invest it? Would it be machinery, seeds, both? Like, what would you prioritize?
Human also, because what we are considering this association I talk to you is that no-till organic farming, if you go that way, because it will answer a lot of big question of the world, will be that every farmers is a local situation, is unique, you know. So the farmer is the main tool to make the change. But as a farmer, we cannot do have a lot of money to make research program on each farm. So it will be more to reconsider the farming job as a farmer. In the next year, the farmer will be part of the solution, because it will be also the research people and the producer people. So we have to reconsider the farming the farmer job. That's the first things, and maybe not considering that all food system is an easy way of industrializing things. It's complex, and we have to consider it's complex, and the solution will be found locally. So we have to connect people to food, to local food, and everything can after be afterwards each small actor, each local solution will be the future. So it's hard to answer to this question, you know.
No, but I think the focus of putting the farmer first as the context, we always keep hearing in regenerative approaches, the context is always different, and the context is fundamental of every farm, and how to turn almost every farm, but maybe every farm, almost into its own research center, because every farmer who starts on this journey wants to experiment a lot, but can't in many cases because you just don't have the time, the budget, the money and the resources. So how to enable them, but also how to enable to not profit from it, but somehow make economic sense out of the research and development is maybe through seeds, maybe through machinery, maybe through other, through food, obviously, because we have to produce quite a lot of food over the next decades. I think it's a very interesting angle to this question, which we haven't heard. We heard education, and we've heard investing in land and investing, but not this, like, okay, how do you do research on almost every farm and make that possible?
That's it. There is a big evolution as a farmer today. When you want to be a farmer, you have to be an engineer. You will have to manage so many different things, as mechanical problems, as human problems, as weather problem, as economics problem. So you have to be in performance, to perform to success. It's a very hard task. And you've heard about the farmer revolution in Europe. There is a problem. There is a big problem. And I would say that when I talk to other research people, they always consider the farmer as a nice man or woman, which will have time, which will have, which will be happy to participate to a research program, you know, and they will never consider that the farmer is a specialist, is an expert, and the cost of the day will be the same as there. And so we have also to reconsider, as I say, the farmer. All the farmer won't be a researcher, but there is a part of the farmer which is able to be kind of a research farmer, you know, and that can very be a performance.
And the other way around, I would argue almost every researcher in agriculture should be a farmer. We had Jonathan Landgren, ex-USDA researcher in the US, who left the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, after an amazing career studying insects and all of that, but was limited on the research he could do because of corporate interests, left it, started a farm, and now does a lot of fundamental research, but also has a commercial farm that has to pay the bills at the end of the year, and has a very different dynamic. And he's never been more busy, and he's never had more fun in his life. But he says every researcher should actually run a commercial farm, small scale, large scale, whatever fits, just to understand what farmers go through, because then you can do really applied research and not just nice things that look funny on a research farm, but actually things that farmers will use. So I would add something there. All farmers, or not all, most farmers could become part-time researchers, and most researchers should probably run farms as well, just to understand each other in a better way. And we always like to ask this magic wand question. If there's, it might be connected to this, maybe in a different way, but if you could change one thing, and only one thing, overnight, what would that be?
There is not only one thing to change.
That's usually the answer here, but let's try to keep it to one or two. Could be huge dreams from early population weed, everyone, global consciousness. We've had all kinds of answers. Like, feel free to dream.
No, it's mostly as a human on the earth, it's two way. For me, the big solution is to find solutions in nature. Nature is so sophisticated. We can get everything with nature. Is to reconsider the nature and to work with it. I think if people, most of the countries on the world, we think that way we can find so many solutions. And so a lot of people are working that way, as a mimetism, there is a lot of things already done, but we have to focus on that, I would say.
And as a final question, which usually doesn't turn out to be the final question, we'd like to ask this question, which is inspired by John Kemp, who always asks us about traditional or conventional, I don't like the term, but conventional agriculture. But we like to ask it in this way. What do you believe to be true about regenerative agriculture that others don't believe to be true?
What is true, I would say, is that there is a lot of capacity, so to work with nature, because nature work well together, the plants, the insects, the animals in the ground. So regenerative agriculture is able to make nature working for us.
And you feel that when you go to, let's say, advanced organic farming conferences or other places, you feel that most people don't see that yet or don't believe that yet? Or what do you, where is that contrarian?
No, I say they not believe it because there is the knowledge we know is not the knowledge we can have on it. We don't know yet what's going on into the ground. We know a lot of things, but there is still a lot of things we don't know. It's amazing we are in 2024. There is so many things to discover. As for instance, in my trials of wheat, I've seen last year, different compartment with other plants. It was as if some variety were inhibiting other plants.
Sorry, but so there we is have to no, explain that. What do you mean exactly by? So you saw what did you see?
We call that allelopathic. Allelopathy, mm-hmm. You know, that the plants will put in the soil some substances which will create relation with other things in the soil, and that will make for in that case it will be the other plants cannot grow as if they were alone, because the wheat coming from the substances coming from the wheat will tell them no, you cannot grow, it's not suitable for you, or
basically I would, faking,
you cannot grow because I won't leave you
creating it.
So there is a lot of interactions, and from now on we can say that we have a lot to discover.
Absolutely. And so this triggered actually a question, which that's why I warned this is not the final question. When you started on this journey, when you took over the farm with your brother, and like how not only practically was the difficult the transition, but also with your parents and also with the local community, like starting in a, let's say, an organic desert, there's not much organic farming around you. Like, how did you deal with that that transition phase and being the quote unquote weirdo or different person at the beginning? I mean, now you have a successful bakery, people taste your bread, all of that is now it's different, but 10 years ago or plus, how was that at the beginning to step so far out of the normal line?
It wasn't that hard because we were convinced that it will work, because we just apply what some other people did in other places. We were kind of a revolutionary in our place, but we just actually copy and adapted the system to our place. The fact is, we are mainly the only ones in France really intensive on every point, because we are different people. Passionate people on the farm, we managed to be a team, and so we can be successful in that. But we only put passion in what we do, and that actually makes the difference, I would say.
And have others, like around you, seen the success and the steps, and have they joined or have they made steps as well? Like how is your impact has been, let's say, beyond the hectares that you farm?
Yeah, actually, when we started organic farming with my brother, there were other farmers in organic farming which have started like 10 years before us. So we kind of continue the organic farming development in our place. And now there is a lot of other organic farming. And so that we are building a new place for having a shop with only organic local products. So we weren't be able to do that 10 years before, but now there is a kind of boule de neige, like the snowball, it's getting bigger and bigger because it's just the way of it we are.
And has that changed your how easy it is, but has it, because sometimes you hear of the pioneers, especially in local context, can be quite lonely being the pioneer. Has that changed because others have joined you, let's say, on the journey and are, you can discuss these things, let's say, in the local bar, in the local bake, of course, your bakery, but in local context and not just always be the different and weird one?
Well, yes, that's right. All the people buying the bread, that makes a lot of people talking about that in the Sunday when you share a meal with friends. So from year, from the time is passing and the solution is here. The products are good, so other farmers will find a way also to find a goal in their job, but also that are not interested in that. It's like when you ask a cereal grower to put animals on the farm, in it's kind of another job. It's like going in organic farming as a conventional farmer, it's kind of another job. And when people say, this farmer should do that, I answer, yeah. And do you come by bike to your job? Or do you have still your car, you know? So the change is the same. So you cannot tell people to change. Everybody is able to change as he is able to do and as he wants. The goal is to make it possible, and more people making that possible makes a change on the global. But it has to be also economic, healthy system, And that's the main point. And that's why a lot of farmers are in the street. By now in Europe, it's harder to have to earn a living now from farming than before, maybe. We don't have the visibility, so it's, but you cannot change your farming system like that. It's really deeply different job. So it's not coming alone, and all the society have to support to buy the products. That's the main goal, I would say now.
To get the rest of society involved as well, and to enable to you pay, to do the research.
And to pay food. That's a problem, because now we don't want to pay food.
We don't want to pay for food, no. And do you see that health angle? I mean, that's a whole different podcast. Let's wrap up here before we get into another rabbit hole or two. I want to thank you so much for taking the time in your very busy agenda to come here and share the work you do. Of course, thank you for the work you do. And thank you for a deep dive into wheat, into bread, into sourdough, and why you are not baking baguettes, which I think is enlightening for many people. So thank you so much, and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, and bye.
Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. For the show notes and links we discussed in this episode, check out our website, investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/posts. If you like this episode, why not share it with a friend or give us a rating on Apple Podcasts? That really helps. Thanks again, and see you next time.